Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
The Quantum Lot are very big on the path thing, right? Well, paths end and change throughout everyone's life. When we say choose to live, it's an abbreviated form of a longer saying. The path you are on has come to an end. Choose to live. If you find yourself at the wrong end of a Quetzalcoatl sword, it's pretty easy to see that particular path is over for you. You either move on to a new path and live, or you stay and die.
What if the death is more metaphorical?
In everyday life, a path's end can be harder to recognize. You must be willing to look inside yourself with absolute candor.
Another thing you're very big on.
So, yes, I popped open one or two or three alcoholic beverages.
Snargle drinks.
Yeah. So I'm well prepared for the podcast. Jesse's got his notes there, as you can hear.
Some of those pages got all crinkled up.
Is that true, Jeff? Are you an addict?
My name is not Jeff.
It's from Community. My name is Jesse.
Okay, so this is episode 106, colloquially known as episode 106 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. The episode will be...
It's Sente Aut Hexa.
Is that Latin?
It's what I assume must have been Latin.
That doesn't sound very Latin at all.
So episode 106.
Like it was Greek.
In which we will discuss...
Pig Latin, pig Greek.
Star Trek Discovery, season 4, episode 3, I believe.
Yeah.
Good. 3, entitled Choose to Live.
Right, Choose to Live. At first I thought the title was like really, you know, like a really big, heavy sort of like, oh my God, someone's going to be super depressed, which, you know, there was that, but it turns out it was a Kwat Malat thing.
Yeah.
It was. Didn't one of you guys talk about predicting Kwat Malat coming around?
Yeah. Last week. Because I saw the title.
And I predicted Burnham's mom.
And I associated the title
Jesse
with the Kwat
Burnham's mom.
And Jesse saw, we put those clues
Michael's
together.
Mom.
Well, no, I didn't see it. I just predicted it because you mentioned Kwat Malat.
I just guessed. All right. So recap of last week's podcast.
Just so you know what everybody did last time.
Previously.
You know, Burnham's mom is still Burnham.
Yes, they're both.
Right. Her name is Gabrielle.
They both go by the surname Burnham.
I know how names work.
that's fucking great, Dan. All right, so what'd you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I think it's the best one so far this season. I think things are finally picking up.
I agree.
I think there's stuff that's finally happening. Last episode was fine, but it was kind of like meandering a bit, and maybe it was all just set up to start to get us started for this episode. I don't know.
But. I was thinking about this, and I realized only after watching this episode, which I really enjoyed. I agreed. I think it was really one of the best in a long time for Discovery. Mm-hmm. The most sort of Star Trek-y in many ways. But what I thought about was I watched this episode and I realized the first two episodes basically functioned like a two-part season opener, mm-hmm. like Way of the Warrior or something like that, where it kind of sets up the background plot for the arc that's going to happen over the course of the season. And now episode 3 is a more independent story where that whole, what's the anomaly called? The DMA?
Yeah, the dark matter anomaly.
Dark matter anomaly. DMA. The DMA.
Perhaps a primordial wormhole.
But maybe not.
You got that DMA?
Because they can't find no tachyons.
There's no evidence of tachyons.
Everyone knows.
It's the first time in Star Trek where there's no fucking tachyons.
If you don't have tachyons,
yeah, right.
You don't have a primordial wormhole.
Dark matter.
We all know this.
Dark matter anomaly.
I can understand why Stamets is frustrated. But my point being that the DMA is in this episode very much in the background. It is influencing events by its existence, but we don't really see it. It's just people are doing things as a result of it, and we're seeing the interesting character and philosophical drama unravel because
so
of
it.
I should say.
Yeah, they didn't really talk. They kind of swept it away. They talked about the primordial wormhole, and it's like, I don't know anything about primordial wormholes, and I didn't know that they were capable of changing direction. And if they are capable of changing direction, how come people weren't early like, oh, maybe it's a primordial wormhole? They were just like, I can't think of anything. Tilly was like, there's nothing I can possibly think of that could cause such a thing. And next episode, Stamets is like, look at my math on my hollow board that I wrote out with like laser fingers.
Hollow board.
And it shows that it's a primordial wormhole. Like, but they were acting last episode as if it was just impossible.
I understand, Dan, but I don't understand the confusion because all the equations were there.
Yeah, right.
All you had to do was read them backwards and understand them.
That's true.
The proof was there.
So, yeah, I'm actually just being lazy because I haven't written out the equations and studied them.
You should have screen capped it and then used Photoshop to reverse the image, do a mirror image, and then just simply interpret the complex equations.
Well, we should just put the equations on the internet and have someone solve them as to why it makes sense that Tilly didn't think there was anything that could do that, and then the next episode Stamets was like, oh yeah.
To be fair to Tilly, Tilly is younger and also not an astrophysicist, I don't think.
I mean,
she has skills in that area. But she is a scientist.
You're right. But they kind of like played it up as if it was this super crazy, impossible celestial event that like was going to be caused by insanity. And really, it's like, oh, it's just a primordial wormhole. But on the other hand,
there's no fucking tachyons.
There's no tachyons. But that still doesn't explain why they were able to come up with a solution for the part of it changing direction.
What we're meant to take is that the reason nobody came up with a primordial wormhole is because there were no tachyons. So, it's not going to be a primordial wormhole. But then Stamets is saying, like, you know what? I'm looking at it, and it's got all these other criteria that presumably are pre-existing criteria that science has already discovered, right? But it's just not fitting.
Right. And like we just established and said, though, it is as an expression to the audience. It seemed like they're trying to pull the old switcheroo on us as an audience. It seemed like
drama, you know. I do think that those first two episodes, and this is not the first time Discovery has done it, the pilot episode, you know, they have multiple episodes with different episode titles, but that do have sort of contain little mini arcs, often to set up the rest of the season, right? That's just something Discovery does. So it really, in that sense, didn't surprise me. I think the main difference here is that in previous seasons of Discovery, including season 3, the arc really was at the forefront. They were doing pieces of the main arc. But here, the story here, there are a couple little, you know, A and B, et cetera, plots, but the characters are at the forefront, you know, where there's Burnham and her mom and Javini picking up on some of that backstory. That story starts and ends in this episode. Javini story, that to the audience, that's a closed arc.
Right. This is another one of those letting go episodes, to that point of her being able to, this is kind of relates to what you're saying. So it's Adira's letting go of this kind of surveillance she has on Gray. Yes. And so that's a form of control. This is all about letting go. It's always about dealing with control. That's like everything comes back to like control in a lot of life. So just saying it's about control is, I don't know, it's accurate, but it covers a lot of things. But this is specifically, you know, Book is letting go of guilt. Stamets even has to let go of this hypothesis he has, which he's having trouble with.
You don't have to let go just because a bunch of Vulcans tell you to let go.
It's easy to fall in love with a hypothesis.
Yeah, true, it is. Now, the main plot
legal to marry them, though.
To marry Vulcans?
No, hypotheses.
Oh. Now, even if you're a theory? Or is that like incest? If a theory marries a hypothesis? Or is that just how science works? Incestual?
I think that's more of a class issue.
Oh, damn. I think
ideally, yes, but I think the class structure within epistemology wouldn't allow for that.
What about an axiom?
An axiom, a verge of
or
axioms.
An aphorism.
Okay, these are words.
If you,
I got more words.
You do? What kind of words you got, Jesse? Protoplasmic.
Proto.
proto-wormhole.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Fuck that word. Yeah, it's a stupid word.
It's a good word. No, it means that you're against disestablishmentarianism.
Yeah, but it's just like one of those words that we have floating around.
If you're a disestablishmentarianist, you are in favor of disestablishing the Church of England.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure the meaning is fine, but it's just it's a dumb word.
It's a long word that had a very specific use in a narrow slice of time.
Like, there's a fish, there's a Hawaiian fish called a Numa Nupa Upa Upa Napu Apuaa or something. Uma Nupa Nupa Apuaa.
I think that sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, I want one.
They got good fish there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's tasty.
Nothing is indigenous to Hawaii. I bet the fish are, though, because it's for the water, not the land itself. But it's Hawaiian waters. I bet nobody imported all those fish. They just came from the ocean.
They just came from the ocean.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the names that are cool.
I wish one of us could do a David Attenborough impression.
Oh. I'm thinking about that guy who plays...
No, we're not going to try it. None of us can do it.
I know this is not David Attenborough, but now I'm reminded of that guy who plays the shame wizard on Big Mouth. He was also in...
Harry Potter. And he was in The Big Lebowski.
A season of Fargo.
He was in a season of Fargo.
And that
season
movie
three.
With Jesse Plemons and I forget her name. Like I think we need to
the one that's married to
Jessica Limes.
It's the one where they take they go
Jessica Plimes.
No,
I mean?
They go through. They drive through the snow.
Jesse Plemons and Jessica Plimes.
They drive through the snow and they visit their parents, and it's a weird thing. And it's like, I think we should break up or something like that. I don't know. It was on Netflix. I don't know. I think we should.
I don't look at no Netflix.
It was a good movie. It was really weird. It was made by the same person who made something else that was cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds right on.
So the Javini thing, as Patrick, you're talking about how that sort of cleaned itself up. So the main
you should tell people it is David Thewlis who you were talking about.
Okay,
David Thewlis.
Yeah,
most famous for playing the laughing avant-garde artist in The Big Lebowski.
Oh, that guy. Word. Yeah,
Dave Thewlis.
That guy.
They made him look really fucking gross in the season of Fargo.
Yes,
they made him.
He was. That's right. He wasn't that. Yeah. That Fargo. Yeah.
All right.
So that has been your Dave Thewlis minute.
It's got Dave Thewlis.
Back to Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
An episode
we quite enjoyed.
Wait. So I was talking about
Tilly Mac and Cheese.
No. Wait. I'm still making my other point here.
Okay.
I forgot.
We're getting ready.
I forgot. So we're talking about it's letting go of these different things. This is a very common theme among a lot of things.
Frozen style.
Oh, right.
Frozen style.
So
let it go.
So Javini. It's hard to think if that plot is really related to letting go. Maybe literally it is. I keep trying to find this connection there, but I guess you could say that to Vinny letting go of the old past and embracing the new one, but that's like, that doesn't really count because she has full control over that.
All have to fit into the
but I'm trying to see, I was just trying to explore it to see if there's anything.
They sort of like more, it was like they reached an understanding with Javini and she saw that, you know, maybe they weren't going to just totally fuck her shit up if, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I kept thinking maybe it was a way for Michael to understand and letting go, but no, it's not really.
It doesn't all have to fit together. In fact, it can be a Michael episode.
Yeah,
but it can be obnoxious if it does all fit together.
Yeah. Oh, no. I know. If it's too on the nose and tightly bowed, but it is interesting that this is all about letting go. Like there's a lot
Did you mention Tilly's letting go?
No. About what?
Or Saru's letting go? Because there are hints of those aspects.
Well, him letting go about the space, something.
No, he's excited about that, but he talks about how it's been a work in progress, his transition back to the Discovery.
Tilly's trying to leave her comfort zone.
Partly, but also Tilly is experiencing that lack of purpose, which she basically stated outright in the previous episode, but this episode... She tries some of these things out, and in the process, she's learning, you know what, maybe it's okay if I'm doing something other than I thought maybe I was going
to
be doing.
So the only other thing I wanted to say previously about this was that I did think it was interesting that everyone was having trouble letting go of stuff, but the Kuat Malat simultaneously demand like a ridiculous, unreasonable amount of control from people. It's absurd, but we'll drop it. Like it was a hot turd when they're done with it. You know, it's kind of, they're really extreme.
They're
but,
so fucking Romulan, I can't even believe it.
It's really extreme, but they have this control that we don't, because we're always all struggling.
Jolan True.
We're always struggling with letting go of shit, and they're just like, I'm going to demand that I control everything in the world, which is unreasonable, but I'm going to do it, and it's fine, and then I'll just drop it like it was nothing after it's done. So that's
kind of interesting. How do you mean precisely drop it?
Well, like when the issue got resolved... Javini was, I don't remember who's, if Gabriel was telling Javini or Javini. Well, they were both in agreement over the fact that, like, this path is done.
Yeah.
Going to the next path. That's what the Kuat Mal'at are about, is knowing exactly when that path is done. Like, Stamets is having trouble knowing if this hypothesis is done.
Well, I mean, I guess...
But they're so they're so confident, they know when it's still going, and they know when it exactly stops.
I don't know if it's done.
But Javini's path... in that role, in that path, is done.
That's done. I mean, yeah, I'm talking about Stamets. I don't know about... He hasn't given up on that.
No, that's what... I don't think it's necessarily done either, but the question still remains, is it makes sense for him to keep exploring stuff
I see what... Yeah.
You know, and Book does need to let go of guilt. That definitely... And that's a path that he was having trouble finishing,
definitely,
you know?
Book, yeah.
And I had a question about that, about, you know, the president, what's her name? Tarini?
For the Vulcan president.
President Tarini. She has this thing, you know,
are they still Vulcans? Yeah, they're still...
She's a Vulcan. They're Vulcans and Romulans and mixed.
Right, that's right.
Kuat Mal'at's a bunch of Romulans.
Kuat Mal'at, maybe there's
a mix now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, now they have
got a human.
A human in there. Human. But President Tarini suggests this idea that she do a mind meld with Book in order to determine sort of more conclusively whether or not there's any evidence of tachyons.
Tachyons.
Because they couldn't find tachyon
evidence
anywhere.
Jesse made a good point. There's always fucking tachyons, even when you don't want there to be tachyons. There's tachyons everywhere.
And no.
Just hit it with a stream of tachyons.
Nowhere is that more true than when you're talking about a primordial wormhole.
Yeah.
Am I right?
I think you're right.
So
I wish I could argue with you, but I can't.
We can't, because we understand this because it's been explained to us very clearly.
Yep.
Extremely clearly that there's no time. But anyway, so she has this suggestion, and so she does the mind meld, and almost immediately, you know, you see the terrible explosion of an entire planet.
Bummer.
And there's no Cherenkov radiation. There's no blue light.
They froze the screen. I was confused. I thought I was supposed to be looking at something at
first. She was fast forwarding. They were making it clear there's no Cherenkov radiation.
Well,
they're like, there is no globe.
Right. Well, originally when they froze, there was like some blur in the middle that was just a rock. And I thought, is there something supposed to be weird about that rock that I'm not recognizing? It's like, no, they were just done.
Because there's no tachyons.
That's not too blue. But, what I was supposed to be noticing is that there were no tachyons in that rock.
But I'm wondering,
as an audience member,
given the conversation that President Tarini had with the Book just prior to that suggestion, in which she's explaining to him, you know, he's seeking some solace, and his initial request is about, like, can you help me just sort of excise my emotions so I don't have to feel bad?
Right.
And she's like, dude, no. Like, first of all, just in general, no. Second of all, it's just not going to work for you.
So,
second of all, your people need emotions.
Yeah.
Right.
So, my hypothesis, my suggestion is... I think President Tarini knew that there was not much utility.
I agree.
In mind melding. I think she did it on purpose to create an excuse to help Book.
Yeah, I agree. I totally think that's the case. When she was,
that's
she was
the
being
vibe
super,
I got.
She was being super smart.
She's clever and she's quite sweet.
I was thinking about that what her, when she was talking about Vulcans experience emotion and stuff like that, because they don't talk about it that much, but I thought I liked the description.
And they have talked about it in the past, and I liked it partly because it was so on the nose and it was so not oblique, even though it's been mentioned and just sort of inferred as well before. But there's still a number of fans that argue, like, no, Vulcans are great because they just have pure logic or whatever. They're wonderful, non-hypocritical, non-racist people. Vulcans are just fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, this what I'm about to say leads to the next part. Made me think about their whole the discipline of the Ari-Mnye.
Are you mocking the Vulcan language?
Yep.
All right.
I hate it. Hate all them apostrophes. I'm anti-apostrophe.
What is this word you're saying?
So the training Vulcans basically go through from the beginning of life to suppress their emotions. Okay. I was thinking about it when Book was like, give me some pointers on that. And it's good she didn't, not only because it would not help him and because he's a Kuezhan and all that, but it's probably dangerous to try to like put that on somebody. Because if you have like, I'm taking from the Vulcan's perspective, if you spend your life suppressing emotions, you can do it in a way that's somehow healthy to Vulcans. I can't picture how would be healthy for me.
In the lore, in the context of Vulcans, is because they're so emotional and strong. That their violence was so extreme that they needed to do something to kill.
And they figured something out.
And so it seems like you don't want to do that training half-assed because it would turn that it would turn it from a discipline to some kind of indulgence in isolation. You know, if you were just, if Book was to just walk in and be like, give me some pointers, it would just be telling him, just go isolate and shrink off in a corner, you know, that wouldn't be healthy, but somehow we really need a full way of doing it.
We haven't seen a lot. We've seen Vulcans meditating. We've seen Spock go through the colonoscopy. The colonoscopy. we've seen hints at it and touches it, but we haven't actually seen much. We've seen their education pods where they're actually like learning facts and math and philosophy and stuff like that. We haven't seen much of their actual training that is being referred to here. And I have a strong suspicion that it pretty much just consists of like the Vulcan master or parent or whatever, just being like, stop it.
Stop it. No,
stop it. Stop it.
You sounded like that precious guy.
Cut that out. You cut it out.
So that sort of made me think of this whole Vulcan's relationship and smugness to human, or Terrans. Do we call them Terrans? Or do we call them humans? Humans? Whatever.
The Terrans are the other people.
They're from the
humans. I think humans is the.
So Tarini,
the temporally and dimensionally like appropriate term.
So the Tarini is all talking about how she respects the Quajons and their reliance on emotion. It's part of who they are and stuff. But every chance a Vulcan gets to like be smug and shit on a human for being emotional, they take that chance. You know what I mean? Like,
Tarini does. She's not all of the Vulcans do that. Spock does this sometimes with McCoy.
Right. And I was thinking maybe Vulcans are just better in 900 years at tolerance. But then later on, that when Stamets is getting pissed about they won't accept that they
hilariously
won't accept,
aggravated.
Yeah, he was in Stamets kind of way. That Vulcan, he shit on Stamets for being emotional. He's all like, oh, you're surprisingly emotional for a science officer. So they're still doing it.
It's a philosophy. It's philosophical as well as cultural. If you have that philosophy, you're going to be an asshole.
But do you think that and playing the what if game is kind of pointless? But do you think that same Vulcan would have shit on Book for being an emotional Quajon? They only shit on humans, it seems like.
I think there's a special jealousy that Vulcans have of humans.
Not to
toss out the pop social psychology for a whole group of fictional people,
right? Yeah.
across thousands of years of history. But if I had to, I would say Vulcans have, over time in particular, been developed to have a certain jealousy and fear. They mentioned this outright on Lower Decks, I think. I think there's, maybe it's Mariner or somebody. There's somebody makes some comment. I could be mixing it up with some other recollection from somewhere else. There's certainly some hints at it in Enterprise. But the idea being that Vulcans, they're like humans. What the fuck is up with these people? They're just barreling around doing all this crazy shit, being all human and ridiculous and getting up to all sorts of, causing all sorts of drama and stuff. This Captain Archer dude just keeps getting the shit kicked out of him, and he has clever quips and stuff in response.
So it would make sense that they harbor some kind of resentment of humans, because that Vulcan saying that to Stamets, it almost seemed like he was retaliating against Stamets for yelling at him.
A thousand years later. T'Pol actually mentions, I think that, I think it might be T'Pol, somebody, I wish I could pinpoint the memory, but I'm starting to think it's T'Pol, some comment about how like humans went from like having warp, like inventing warp, to like just going places in 100 years or some short amount of time, whereas it took like the Vulcans like thousands of years to like sort all that stuff out. So they're intimidated.
So that's why I'm saying when they're accepting of the Quajon, it's like they have come to an understanding with the Quajon, but
plus that dude's planet just blew up.
Yeah, too. But it seemed like that Vulcan was being, a lot of Vulcans are kind of petty with humans, you know? Like, Stamets was yelling at him about this emotion, the Vulcan comes back, he's like, oh, you're an emotional scientist, blah. Like, that's like, you know, a bullshit fucking response if you're supposed to be better than that. But yeah, it's like you said, Patrick, maybe they're harboring some kind of resentment towards all that, you know?
President Tarini also is a politician. Not that I think she was insincere in her interactions with Book, but she's a politician, so she also maybe has more experience, potentially more empathy. She's not a scientist sitting up on one of those glorious meditation, floating meditation platforms.
This guy's took all day to meditate.
Did anyone get any like Jedi Council Phantom Menace vibes from that?
Yeah, a little bit.
But that was pretty tight though, how it was all up in the air.
Looked cooler than the Phantom Menace.
It looked much cooler.
Much cooler.
That just looked like a terrace with the big windows.
Yeah. This was, but you'd think it'd be windier and colder up there when they were way up there.
force fields.
Oh, they must have force fields.
Maybe they go up there to be away from the sandstorms.
Do you think warm red spice is just opium? I think it's opium. When she offered Book warm red spice
like
to
it.
Calm him down,
like
she
it,
just
yeah.
gave him. She was just going to give him some fucking.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I was thinking
a tea or a hot toddy, but now I'm thinking opium or
some cider. Really, red
heroin?
Spice cider.
maybe it's just Afghani heroin
some
that they import from Earth that day.
Jamaican red hair.
Yeah, it could be a type of weed, Vulcan weed. Vulcan weed, probably extra trippy.
Vulcan space weed.
Yeah, makes you think all sorts of illogical shit. You don't come up with good ideas, you come up with shitty ideas. They just smoke it so they can sit around and be like, hey, let's just have some shitty ideas for a while.
Yeah. Jesse, you were mentioning Tilly and her macaroni. You'd think she'd nibble at that a little bit more. She took a big old gulp, didn't she? She was like,
she's trying things out.
She's trying things out.
Living her life.
But if I was going to try something out that I historically
you're
didn't
you,
like,
Tilly's
I wouldn't.
Tilly.
I wouldn't but come on.
Tilly dives in there.
She does, I guess, doesn't she?
She grabs life by the horns or the little straps if you're wearing overalls. If life is wearing overalls.
Tilly probably wears a lot of overalls off duty.
She grabs life by the tusks.
By the tusk, by the single tusk.
By the tusk.
By the two tusks.
Which sounds more...
How many tusks are on a targ? Do targs have tusks?
Targs sometimes... I think they sometimes have... Yeah, I think they have tusks. Maybe
how many
not.
Tusks on a targ?
It depends on the iteration of the targ.
I can't believe... I keep trying to think Tellerite of that. Phallus. Something. That's what I was looking
phallus.
For.
Phallus.
I kept coming... Philanthropic? No, that's not...
Philanthropic.
Do you have...
That was the only word I
could think. Phallus?
Fallacy.
Do you think a horn or a tusk is more... phallic?
Well, it depends on the horn.
But
what
I'm
type of horn are you talking
when
about?
I'm,
like
a
steer
horn?
But when I say tusk and horn...
Where do antlers figure into this scheme?
No, I'm asking you a question, straightforward.
I'm asking a follow-up
okay.
question.
No,
what's
the point
difference?
Is... No, there's that's the whole point. There's
between
no...
Between a tusk
no,
and
we
a
have,
horn.
We, of course, know that the difference is academic in this situation, all right?
But perhaps meaningfully academic.
No.
I mean, the distinction may
the
be...
The whole point of the question is what summons more imagery in your head?
You're suggesting a distinction.
This is like a Rorschach test. Motherfuckers.
Okay.
What think of what your mind goes to.
What's the question again? Antlers?
No,
horns,
no antlers.
A horn.
Horn or tusk?
A
which
horn.
Is more phallic?
A horn, because a tusk is a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think of penises as teeth.
Okay. except if you're
a tusk is a tooth, but aren't they essentially the same? It's the same material, a horn, a tooth.
It's keratin, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like calcium.
I'm happy with the answer.
Well, I mean, a
given.
Tooth isn't keratin, of course. It's ridiculous. That's another reason. Teeth are harder.
Calcium carbonate.
Tusks are harder. Yeah. Okay. So, other things in this episode.
So, well, we're, that
not a lot of tusks.
That whole conversation.
Limited tusks.
I thought, so this show, this episode is really good, but
yes.
It was another really heavy one. Discovery, I mentioned this last week, tends to be really heavy.
I think I cried three times.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously.
Yeah. But
even on the second watch, when Gray woke up, I was like, ugh.
Right. So, in other Star Treks, I mentioned when something adventurous or even something tragic happens, there's this sense of sort of adventure to it. And Discovery, it's really heavy and really emotional. And the only moments of levity in this episode were really... Tilly is often, you know,
yes.
that by herself. But her interacting with Saru is this sort of...
Great,
it's awesome.
Natural humor, too.
Yeah, natural humor.
Natural
it makes,
from the characters.
And it makes you smile and think and stuff, you know. And so it's really... I think that's really welcome. I wish they had a little bit more stuff like that in Discovery
but
sometimes.
I thought this episode actually had a few good ones like that.
It had a bunch of... Tilly was doing a bunch of sillies this,
yeah, like,
this
like,
whole episode.
Yeah, like with that Kwat Malat. That was a cool scene where she was all being enthusiastic and the Kwat Malat was like, it's cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was humorous when Stamets was aggravated by the Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that counted as sort of a natural character-based humor, the interactions there.
Yeah.
I also thought Saru's aphorism, when he says, it is difficult to ride to Veil Bees on only one set of buttocks.
Right.
And Hugh was all like, he totally was like, almost about to laugh. He's like, he smiled. He's like, that's great.
Yeah, he was trying three of them.
Yeah.
I like, I don't know when Saru was talking to Tilly and he goes, what is it you hope to gain from novelty? I don't know why that made me laugh.
I really like that because it's like, you know, it's one of those questions that's simultaneously a stupid question and a brilliant question.
Yeah.
And upsettingly, you're like, oh my God. why do I seek out novelty?
And I know the show didn't mean it this way, but it really makes Culber come off as kind of a quack in that scenario. Like, I mean, Culber's great. He does. He's working. He's a doctor. He's a counselor.
Oh, you mean him telling her to eat macaroni and cheese?
Well, him telling her to just try different. Like, first of all,
that doesn't sound quackish to me.
I mean, just it maybe seems
he shouldn't
so
be the counselor. He's the doctor. They should get somebody else to be the counselor.
Well, I mean, they don't have anyone else
in the future.
They don't
have beta zits.
Maybe they just need.
There's no more beta zits.
Yeah, they don't got a lot to choose from. Look, I think Culber is normally fine, but when Saru says, "What is it you hope to gain from novelty?" in a way that's kind of talking down to it a little, not really. It was a great question. I thought it was, but there's a part of it that's like, I don't see why this is useful.
Are you suggesting Culber was just like, you know what, Tilly, I just can't deal with you right now. How about this? Yeah. Try some food you don't like.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
lick the walls, right. Sniff the trash. He's water some plants.
He's just like, get out of my hair for a little bit. I'm dealing with a gray thing.
Go bother Saru.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Saru is like, oh, send her on a dangerous away mission. Yeah. And Culber's like, oh man, I did not mean that. I just meant, you know, try some gross cheese thing.
I know it wasn't meant like that, but that's kind of what I was thinking because Culber, I mean, it is kind of a superficial sort of bit of advice. I agree with you though, actually. I think that would come to mind if this was a real life scenario, what would come to mind is, yeah, he just needed to get her to do something else for a while he handles this other situation.
I take it.
Guys, he's like a server.
I took it sincerely. I think it is going to make sense once whatever Tilly's arc as it continues, however it begins to resolve, which we might find out more next week, because if he diagnosed her, right? Diagnosis may be a strong word, but Tilly comes to him, she's having this trouble. If he is astute enough to figure out, you know what it is, she needs to be pushed to try, she needs to understand that her place does not have to be here. Because I think that's what it comes down to, or doing the job she's doing.
He thinks trying different things would have her stumble on something new.
Whole being in Starfleet Academy and thinking you knew exactly you were doing the exact right thing and everything was going to, you know, you had a path set out before you. That's why there's so much talk about paths in this episode, the whole Kawat Malat path action, pathfinder rigmarole. Because I really like the line in her conversation with Gabriel Burnham towards the end, where Gabriel Burnham says something along the lines, you know, Tilly's like, what if it's a false, what if the death is a metaphor? It's like, you know, the real death. And Burnham's mother understanding where Tilly was going, saying sometimes it can be difficult to recognize when a path ends in the real world, right? Which I thought that's an astute observation, right? That's useful information for anybody to understand. You're like, you know what? You're muddling through some things and it might take you a while to kind of sort of figure out that you should be taking things in a different direction. So I think that's why it makes sense, because Culber knew she doesn't have some more serious issue going on. She doesn't need medication. She doesn't really need counseling. She just needs to be kind of pushed to realize that she can go in her own direction.
Yeah, and come to think of it, changing little routines of your life, going left instead of right, can have you bump into someone else's routine that you would never normally have run into, which is kind of what happened here. Yeah. Although you don't want to sleep, put your head where your feet are on your bed, because then you get feet germs on your head, and then your feet is
no,
on your
she
pillow.
Just put her, well.
And then your feet's
that's
on
what
your pillow.
That's what happens when you switch them back, because your feet were on the pillow the night before.
Well, no,
but you can just recycle it in the replicator.
You put your head where your feet are, and then you get feet germs. But now your feet have transferred your feet germs to your pillow, so even when you go back to normal, you put your feet on your head and you shake it all around.
And that girl drools.
And you do
we've seen how that girl drools.
Yeah,
season one comes right out.
So you're assuming that they replicate new sheets every day.
Yes.
Isn't that traditionally why we have a head of a bed, so we don't get feet germs on our head?
I don't know the answer to that question. Write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Subject line, feet at top of head.
Why is
top
that?
Of bed.
I sleep diagonally.
Well, that
no,
means...
I don't.
Well,
I hover about.
I sleep,
you
I sleep
three
on the
feet
other,
above
the other
my
way,
bed,
like the width of the bed.
And creatures come at the night and sort of tug at my flesh, but gently, not in a painful way, but it's very upsetting. And
it's called
all
bed
night.
Bugs.
I float 3 feet above the bed while these little creatures sort of nibble at my flesh, and it's like that until the sun comes up and I wake up.
You know,
very tired.
Yeah, that sucks for you, man. That's why they have
that doesn't happen to you.
That's why they have a head of a bed look differently on a bed frame. The head of the bed looks differently, so you don't mistake it for the foot of the bed. So you don't get feet cooties on your head.
So you
don't
just get in the wrong side of the bed by accident. Oh, I thought I meant to go on this side.
And then you'll get like toxoplasmosis or whatever.
Oh, shit.
Did you say toxoplasmosis? Toxoplasmosis.
Tachyon vaginosis.
Toxoplasmosis Gandhi. That's the germ that. One theorist thinks makes people like cats and want to have lots of sex. Look it up.
People who like cats have lots of sex?
No.
I've got two cats.
All right. Okay.
What does that tell you about me?
The theory, which I believe is generally unsubstantiated but not entirely implausible, is based on the fact that toxoplasmosis gondii
verbose
is whatever the little virus or whatever it is, bacteria.
A bacteria.
It can only reproduce inside of a cat's body.
It's an osis.
You're talking about toxoplasmosis.
Exactly.
I'm talking about cosmoplasmosis.
It can only reproduce in a cat's body. So what it needs to do is it needs to get into a rat or a mouse. Other rodent, and it can affect the chemistry of the rodent's brain, so that the rodent is no longer afraid of the smell of cat urine, which would normally help keep it away from cats.
It's like being a zombie. It's like when beavers get rabies.
Similar to being a zombie, and
it's like rabies.
They get close to the cat. The cat eats it. The bacteria goes in the cat, and now they can reproduce. Now that's well established.
Cosmoplasmosis exists so cats can eat rats.
No. It exists so it can reproduce, like everything else.
By eating rats?
No, it tricks the rat into being eaten by the cat because for some reason it can only reproduce in a cat metabolism, but it can survive in other metabolisms, right? So it tries to get to a rat and then into the cat.
Oh, so the rat that drinks the urine and then flies around town and another cat eats it.
The rat need not drink the urine in this scenario. It only need no longer have a mental fear of cat urine smell, which keeps it away from areas frequented by cats.
Seems like a lot of bacteria depends on rats to move it about.
The theory, extension of the theory put forward by at least one, possibly more people, researchers, is that there's some evidence that suggests that when humans are infected with this particular bacteria, that one of the side effects can be both similar to the rats, no longer having a problem with being around cats, maybe being affectionate towards cats, and for some reason also an increased libido. Look it up.
So if you live around
on the internet.
So if you live with cats, you're hornier.
No, not necessarily, but maybe. I don't think it's a function of how many cats you are, but it would be hilarious if it was like an additive or exponential.
Or like you had to have like at least 5 cats.
Yeah. It could be that you need a minimum number of cats and dirty cats too. Cause it's not like toxoplasmosis is like all over the joint. All right. So that was the toxoplasmosis minute. And now we're getting back to Star Trek Discovery.
That's how you get to the love of your life. You give them a bunch of dirty cats and then they get horny and then you have sex with them.
Yeah. And it would be great if they did like an episode of Lower Decks about that with Dr. Ta'ana.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
Right? Okay, so what's next on the docket? Refer in discussion.
I confess to have dined quickly. Sorry, Saru talks.
Saru was great in this episode.
He was awesome.
He was offering great advice. Even right down to him again.
Even went down to when Tilly was like, he's like, "Oh, you're finished eating," and he's wiping his chin on lips. He's like, she was like, "I was hoping you'd have time to answer a question." He's like, "For you, anytime," or whatever. You know, I don't know what he said. I totally butchered it, but you know what I'm saying? Like right down to how he was inviting Tilly.
Was
to
he
have
eating
a
like kelp biscuits or something?
Kelp skits.
That's all they eat.
That's all they eat is kelp.
Yeah.
Kelp,
that's kelpians.
But I like Saru. I liked Saru a lot in this episode.
He's been great to watch this season. Yeah. I mean, he's always great. Saru is one of the best characters on the show.
I bet his room is stinky and humid though.
I don't know. You could be right, but I don't know. It looked kind of nice. I like the frog sounds. I liked his bed.
I think he looks better in the red uniform than the blue uniform.
He looks really sharp in that uniform.
Pretty sharp.
His town council brooch looks glistening and wonderful. So I'm digging that. I mean, I dig the production quality in general. Discovery's always had good production quality, but this season has been blown out of the park, and especially this episode. right? This episode, for me, it had more world building than like all previous episodes of Discovery, all previous seasons, because they had the Vulcan stuff and they had the moon ship thing and all the stuff going on in there. They had the bar. Right. So you get, I think that's isn't that the introduction to the Discovery bar? I don't think we've seen that before.
Oh, right. That dartboard.
That awesome bar with that fireplace looking all chill. And then he's talking with Adira and they're all upset.
Adira Oblongata.
And then he sits down and is talking to Saru and they're just sipping on some like scotch or whatever. That looked awesome. Right. And part of it, I think, is, you know, they've got this new technology they're using and they've just gotten, you know, they've gotten the handle of it. It's similar to how in Lower Decks and to some extent in TAS, those shows were able to use the animated format to really expand the world. And I don't just mean in terms of like how the worlds look, but on a typical episode of Lower Decks or TAS, you could see them going from like planet to planet to planet to ship to crazy, all these different rooms on a planet and a forest and all this stuff, because in animation you can just draw whatever you want.
You don't need
bunch
sets.
Of different types of aliens.
Absolutely, yeah. Crazy alien types, crazy concepts that would be very difficult to do in live action. Whereas generally most Star Trek, even Discovery up till this point, up till at least season 3,
it's all in one room.
They would often have majestic sets or majestic settings, but they would be like the whole episode.
Right.
And you'd be like, we have this really cool building, but everything's going to be in this building.
Yeah.
Or we have this really cool beach. And so we're going to really do a cool lot of scenes on this beach painting and have a lot of people talking for a long time on this beach because it looks cool. But this was one of the first episodes where it really seemed like they were able to do like so much. And I know they've gotten close in other episodes, but it felt different for me somehow this time. It seemed like it was almost like animated style, but in live action.
Yeah. That big room they went to with all the Ambrosians, yes. Or no, they're not.
I don't know. I couldn't remember.
Bromians.
Abronians.
Abronians.
They're Bronians,
hey, bro.
Dude.
Hey, bro.
Abronians.
Bros.
Hey, bro. Why'd you wake us up, bro?
We're the Bronians.
And I know this is just a CG sort of transition scene, but I thought it was really cool when the ship landed on that planet. That shot of the ship landing looked really cool. Actually, it didn't look cheesy. It didn't look excessive, and it made me feel like I was out in space.
It made it
look really sci-fi in a cool way.
Yeah, all the ship shots I thought were ship shots.
Ship shots.
Hey, ship shots.
We're really in ship shots.
Shots were in ship shape.
Right from the beginning, we get introduced to the USS Credence.
Right, that had those nacelles. Were all those nacelles?
It was like rocking all these nacelles, but it looked a little bit more classic, but was still clearly programmable matter. Now, was it named after after Credence Clearwater Revival?
I don't know, and I've been trying to think up a joke this whole time, and I haven't been able to come up with it.
I bet instead of going to
Credence themed joke, so write us in on that one.
Instead of going to 10 forward, I bet they all meet down on the corner.
Yeah,
it was just like, you know, that's where the bar is. Yeah. It's like down on the corner.
Yeah.
Maybe the first officer has a bad habit of like, you know, right before a dramatic act break, when something happens on like the view screen, the first officer's all like, now that's a bad moon rising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a good one?
That's a good one.
Are there any other clear instructions? Oh, how about this? Do you think
run
they,
through the jungle?
Do you think they regularly review Ensign Mayweather's personal logs from the Star Trek Enterprise episode Fortunate Son?
That's not so good.
No, that episode is not that good. I agree.
You willfully ignorant right
it's
now.
Not bad. Joke. It's not bad.
Is there any kind of abbreviation CCR, like any kind of rank that's called that?
No, I don't believe.
Cool. Captain Commander.
Captain Commander. Cool
Captain Ransom.
Commodore.
Cool Captain Ransom.
Combo.
But anyway,
so Commander.
Credence, the USS Credence looked cool. I thought it was an interesting, cool future design. Future design still had some classic elements.
They had to scrap the SS Skinner, I think.
The did it crash.
oh, I guess. Oh, snap.
All right.
It took me a minute. That's pretty good.
Not too soon, just in time. So the moonship was cool. The concept was cool. The way it was depicted was cool. The insides, the whole turbo lift scene with the music coming in all repulsive and ridiculous. My subwoofer was going a little crazy. I was like, oh, I don't have to turn down my subwoofer. This is rattling my television set.
I'm liking the music a lot this season. Yes. I mean, even the closing credits.
It's like, boom, out there, right in your face. Not the closing credits, of course, but the music is.
The music in general, but even the
it's making itself known.
And then in the closing credits, I could understand why some people might not be into it because it's not very Star Trek-y. It's like with cellos and pianos.
It's like the end of Downton Abbey or something.
It's like Ramin Djawadi.
It's what?
It's like Ramin Djawadi music.
It's more like Udon Djawadi.
I don't get either of those.
Ramin Djawadi, he wrote the like the Game of Thrones music.
Oh. Ramen noodles, udon noodles.
Westworld. Okay. Lots of stuff now. He's like the it. He was like sort of the it television composer.
Would you prefer I said rigatoni? COVID.
But even so, even though maybe the closing credits may not fit into most Star Trek style stuff.
You're making me hungry.
I kind of like the music. It goes along with the theme
I do
of
too.
The show.
I like
it. And the music during the episode.
I don't especially dig the closing music, but
yeah,
the rest
I understand
of the music,
why.
Rest of the music. No, cool.
The closing music is a little kind of like
it's maudlin and it doesn't jump out at me. Yeah. But what does you it know does they have been
it's,
making
it's,
really
it's mawkish.
It is mawkish. It is a little mawkish, which is not necessarily bad, but it is a little mawkish.
Yeah.
Mawkish. It's a little mawkish.
But I'm okay with it.
The use of themes is really good, especially the placement of the themes. Like when you hear the books theme, basically, that comes in when he's, you know, kind of coming to peace with things and you're hearing that music.
I really like what they're doing with Book this season.
Oh, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I love how on the one hand he's dealing with this horrifying, terrible thing. And part of me is always kind of like, it's kind of upsetting. Why are you fucking up with this guy's life?
Yeah, I know. Cause he seems like,
a solid dude. He's done everything right. And you kill his fucking nephew and brother.
It's always such a super bummer when someone like that, like starts getting all sad. You're like, oh man, he didn't deserve that.
But then on the other hand, they're balancing it nicely with, they've developed this odd couple relationship between he and Stamets. Mm-hmm. And it's not that that's a laugh out loud riotous thing, but it is fun. It's interesting to see those two interact and the points of connection they have versus the points of distinction they have where they maybe might disagree a little bit.
Yeah. Stamets says, I can't bring these scientists up to speed without a clinical forensic discussion of your loss. That line stuck out to me too. It's kind of like saying, we're going to talk about some shit if you want to come. But he said it in the most sensitive way possible.
Because he was it's similar to what we were suggesting before that
President Tarini.
No doubt she holds many PhDs and other advanced degrees.
She's not a cat person. Tana Trini.
Dr. Tana, Dr. Trini. Just as President Tarini was.
Not Rillick.
Manufacturing. We hypothesized she was manufacturing a reason to help Book through a mind meld.
Yes.
In this case, he's asked to do it. Book basically is asking Stamets, look, can you come up with an excuse to take me? And Stamets comes up with it. He manufactures the excuse. He's like, all right, we need you to tell them what the deal is. And like, we don't see that happen. We just see Book kind of standing around looking forlorn.
See, I couldn't tell at first. So the first time I watched it, that's what I thought, is that Book was going to be telling them like about the loss that he experienced. But then the second time I watched it, I was wondering if it was simply Stamets just warning him, hey, I'm going to have to tell this. This might be traumatizing to hear. I wasn't sure which it was.
It might've been both. And or him just saying, look, I've got to like write something down on the form to we got to fill out a form.
Yeah, this guy was here.
You can't just visit like, you know, Navarre.
Yeah, you got to get
a
visa.
You
got to get a visa.
Just let any old.
You don't just, one does not simply visit Navarre.
You have to, business or pleasure.
You need a reservation.
3 month maximation, put your address that you're going to be arriving at, who you're staying with. Did you look at? Did you leave your bags unattended at any time?
Are you one of those extra smelly humans?
Are you bringing more than 10,000 bars of gold pressed latinum?
You eat too much meat.
Yeah, what is it? The aboridiums?
The aubergines?
The bromines.
Abronians.
Abronians.
We just woke up from isolation.
So Abronians have biomatter as their biomatter has latinum. Now,
the biomatter
as a result, do you know what that means?
Cryo-freeze the biomatter.
Make gold-pressed latinum?
Well, I mean, people like their stuff, but do you know what that means? It means that Abronians can't be replicated, which would that mean they can't be transported?
Oh.
Can you transport latinum?
You can transport latinum. Otherwise, it would be useless as currency because you couldn't carry it around.
So why can you transport something?
You could put it in a spaceship.
Now.
Why can you transport something but not replicate something?
Now.
It's the same thing.
Now. No. No. Replicating is not precisely
the same.
It's the same.
They're distant cousins.
It's a similar process, but it's, you're starting with
something
or you're starting with nothing.
Okay, yeah. So transporting, you're starting with the things already, but then you're breaking them down into its fundamental parts, and then you're reassembling them again. Replication is essentially doing that, except it's taking it from completely abstract matter and it both involves reassembling molecules and shit.
One way to look at it, although I don't think this is the answer,
this
because
is such
it could be
one
true
of these pointless discussions.
One way to look at it is that latinum can only, the reason you can transport it, but you can't replicate it, is because when you have a replicator, you need source matter that is manipulated and turned into the new matter.
Which
and
is what happens in a transporter.
No.
Used to be. Let me just.
In a transporter, you have source matter, and then you're recreating that exact source matter at the new place. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing, right?
Replicator,
you have a soup of some sort of seed matter, and you're converting it at a molecular level into a new thing. And in the fictional world of Star Trek, latinum, for some reason, can't do that. So in order to replicate latinum, maybe you could replicate latinum, but you'd have to have latinum as the seed, at which point it is pointless. Because you would be you just already have it in the replicator seed bank.
Yeah, that's what I kind of.
Does that make sense?
No, that's what I meant when I was saying.
Is that a good fictional explanation?
Yeah, that's what I meant when I was talking about. Before you said that, I had mentioned about how replicators take some of this abstract matter essentially and turn it into something, whereas.
Transporters.
I keep wanting to call them teleporters. They're not teleporters. That's ridiculous.
But it is ridiculous. You're fucking embarrassment.
But transporters. So basically, they share something in common in that they're both reconstructed. Something from basic matter, but the difference is the source for transporters is the same, and then it's abstract whatever nonsense for replicators.
I think that's what we're meant to understand. I mean, honestly, we're not meant to understand that either. We're meant to understand the writers told us. So
it's almost the same machine but O'Brien knows how to work them both.
It seems like if you modified a replicator, you could make it transport stuff instead.
I bet you could. I'm surprised. I have no recollection of them doing that. But
you could press a button on the Excelsior and have it appear on the Cerritos or
so
whatever.
You mean, you can send a milkshake from ship to ship. Is that what you're talking about?
Your milkshake?
Will
I drink your milkshake?
You can drink the milkshake from another ship.
Drink it up.
You can drink their fucking milkshake. Bastard in a basket.
Wait, what are you saying? So milkshake, yeah. So if you press the milkshake button on one ship, you can make it appear in another ship. So that's kind of like
basket of chicken tenders.
Yeah, it's like transporting. Tendies. Okay.
Nuggies.
Music is good.
So
I like the music in the moonship when they were taking
the thing up.
They found that cool elevator thing.
Yeah, the turbo lift.
Turbo lift.
It was well executed production.
Ancient
design.
Turbo lift.
What was that? Yeah, what was that about? Javini was saying that they have until Tilly finishes in order to fix the cryostasis. I thought that was bullshit for two. That was what was happening when Michael was like, "Hey, look, I can fix this," and she has Mommy Burnham with a sword up to her, and she's like, "Okay, but you have until Tilly finishes doing whatever she's doing." That's bullshit for two reasons. Number one, like, that's not enough time. Why are you limiting it to that? And number two, couldn't Tilly just stall? I don't know which
Tilly was stalling. I mean, she was clearly stalling.
Let's get it straight here.
She was like, I'm almost there. Oh, I really messed this up. Tilly could have fixed that shit right up.
The Kawhi Malat was probably stalling too. She didn't really want to slit Gabrielle's.
I really like this story, this self-contained little story. I like the philosophical kind of questions it brought up, because it really talked about a little bit about the good of the money, many versus the good of the one or the few, you know. It talked a little bit about the difficulty determining who's in charge, right? Who has the more, mm-hmm. It's not just who's in charge. Burnham is thinking about it in terms of who's in charge, maybe Admiral Vance is as well, but it's also who is morally correct, or who morally gets to make the decision when you're talking about the expanses of space with the cross, you know, overlapping, you know, interests and concerns, and then all the political stuff that goes into it. I liked all that. However, there were some contrivances that are not unusual to the world of Star Trek or television in general. Firstly, the whole setup that got the plot going confused me, because I was confused as to why she would go after Federation ships for the dilithium instead of, like, you know, attacking some like weak planets or something.
Why would she go for top dog?
Yeah. And then you could argue maybe she thought it would be easier. Cause the other thing that threw me off a little bit is I know they wanted to have a Starfleet officer die, mm-hmm. right? That was something they clearly wanted, that specific thing, right? They wanted the tension to be centering on that specific idea, but he kind of didn't, it wasn't really like a Starfleet way to react. You'd think the normal, like the TNG reaction might be like, yeah, you try to stop the intruders or whatever, but I mean, you've got like a giant star's worth of, you have a planet's worth of dilithium, and yes, you don't want the criminals to get away with this dilithium, but wouldn't the normal procedure be more along the lines of like let them go? It's right. Got a tracker in it. We'll find them without violence or something.
Yeah, they like already no had more. They had a tracker in it already.
It just threw me off a little. Now you could of course argue that they, you know, they do what's necessary, but that it felt a little contrived to me, because they were like, we want this person to be doing something really, really good, but be tainted morally with a murder. We want that murder to be a Starfleet officer, because we want, and which is a little, makes me a little uncomfortable, because it's like, why should Burnham care more that she murdered a Starfleet officer versus if she murdered some random alien merchant or something, you know, or ambassador or something like that, which might have made it a little bit more interesting, because then it makes the moral, if you don't have a moral obligation beyond just being a good person to track down the murderer of some person you don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think they could have gone another way, but they seem to want this. And maybe there's a reason, maybe that future episodes will touch on this again, but I don't know.
And there's the thing about the sort of bureaucratic reason why the Federation is only giving dilithium to groups of people and not individuals.
Yeah.
And so, but she didn't want to say that it was for a group of people, because she didn't want to give up their location or their secret or something.
But it's like,
I mean, wouldn't like the Federation would be interested in perhaps protecting these people?
If they wanted to make the point that she didn't trust the Federation, she hadn't yet come around on them, because there, you know, there's evidence that the Federation wasn't trusted by a lot of people.
Right,
there's a reason Navar left.
Yeah.
But they didn't stress it enough. I think it would have been helpful if they wanted to stress it that she, because the analogy was there. They had already set up half the analogy, which is in the current contemporary world, when governments give out things like foreign aid, development, you know, grants and policy, things like that, that's generally government to government, right? You know, there's of course some different ways to do it, but you know, traditionally it's like, we're not going to give it to the orphans here. We're going to give it to the government.
You're not parachuting, and then
the
money,
government's supposed money, to give it to the orphans or something like that. That's not that uncommon. And
that's
so
why it doesn't work.
And so you can see here that there's a logic to that. On the one hand, there's like, we just want to make sure somebody responsible is using this. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, but even quote unquote cool governments, including the Federation, are not necessarily responsible at all times. I mean, sometimes they got like weird crab worm creatures living up in their necks and they're doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
Or they got
changelings. Or nanobots.
Or the Klingons team up with Admiral Cartwright and just fuck everything up.
Well, it's this whole Kuat Malat, what is it? The
absolute candor?
No, not the absolute candor. The
walk a mile in a fish's feet.
Whatever. Not what Patrick was saying. Something about walking with Jesus. I don't know.
No, I said walk a mile in a fish's feet.
That's not something people say.
Fish ain't got no
feet. What'd you say? A hopeless lost cause. It's a more example.
We learned about it in Picard.
Of this whole Kuat Malat like need to control everything. It's like, yeah, they can't just join up with somebody, even though joining up with the Federation potentially would have helped her out even more, which it ended up in the end helping her more.
That's a good point.
She's like, no, I got to do it myself, and that's a perfect example. You don't want to do everything yourself, because that's worse for the situation. It's like, stop being so fucking like narcissistic.
Though I do see you're getting a little upset about it, perhaps that's the point we're supposed to take, right? So, but that's maybe, I think you're right. I think you've encapsulated better than I interpreted it, is that we're supposed to understand that part of the problem is their rigid tradition.
I definitely agree with you, though, about, yeah, it did seem contrived about
that was a
and the end bit was a little contrived.
And
too. I do understand your point of how it is kind of weird that they would try to, you know, hit us emotionally because it's a Federation person instead of just
I'm worried if it's for the audience, I don't like that.
Yeah.
If it's because they're trying to make a point down the line with Burnham, whether it'll be a good point or a bad point, in my opinion, I don't know yet. Maybe part of me is just like, it's kind of standard. It's kind of standard to be like, oh, one of ours was killed.
I get a little nervous about when tribalism is introduced
into Star Trek in that way. And it's not very clear what the message is trying to be.
Yeah. And it did definitely seem more of like, you could explain it away by saying, well, the Kuat Mulat are like this or that or whatever. It did seem more like it was sort of like a weak setup kind of, you know, in terms of why she ended up having to kill that officer. And, you notice Discovery and Picard, both of them, they used like new super fighting moves, like kung fu mixed with pro wrestling and stuff like that.
They're not doing any of that double-handed.
Double axe handle.
They save that for lower decks.
Strangely, I got that from, that's actually a pro wrestling maneuver.
But that was the only one
they did. Now they'll like do like, I know in Picard they were doing like pile drivers and body slams and suplexes and shit. But now they're also doing like kung fu moves and stuff. Like the fights used to be so.
And there's
like,
sword fighting.
There's crazy fights. They used to be all theatric in the other Star Treks, and now they're all, you know, super fight mode, which I don't like or dislike. It's just an interesting.
It's a different school of stage combat.
Yeah. I thought the whole thing about leaving the phasers on board, I thought that was a little weak. I mean, yeah, I get it. You know, it's not the Kuat Mulat way or whatever. It just didn't sit right with me about like how they just were so eager to leave the phasers on board, because she said that she won't be able to, her reasoning was she won't be able to get through to Tavini when the people bring their phasers. But I mean, what does that really mean? Why do they need to get through to her that badly?
Part of the problem.
I totally believe that we should try to understand someone or something before trying to threaten it. I get that. But there's a limit to how much Starfleet needs to understand.
Burnham would agree with you.
Yeah. There's a limit to that. That how much they need to understand Tavini's purpose before she at least has to meet him halfway. Well, you know what I'm saying?
But that's where the problem, I think, is the problem is if they had been able to develop that a little bit more clearly, it wouldn't have come off as what it did come off to me as. The reason they couldn't take phasers down there was because they wanted to have
cool sword
fights.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why.
Yes, that's precisely what I was
thinking. It's totally okay if that is the creative production reason. I never have a problem with a movie or whatever that wants to create. I mean, it happens in James Bond all the time. Some of the best James Bond scenes are contrivances because the point is you want to see some, you know, Jackie Chan fighting with a shopping cart. However,
I think Star Trek,
it has to be done well.
Yeah.
And it was a little clunky here, because I watched that and I was like, oh yeah, they want sword fights.
And I like that Star Trek is evolving, but one of the things about Star Trek is they tend to avoid contrivances like that, I feel.
They do the contrivances. They usually do them well.
I mean, Picard did have to be a ninja on that planet that one
Here's
time.
An example.
So that is
exactly
kind of weird.
Well, and not only that, in the show Picard, they wanted to have a sword fight as well, and they did. But the contrivance was that Picard was on a planet, you know, with the Romulan refugees, and then there's a guy threatening him, and then Elnor is introduced. See, and that's less contrived. It's a contrivance, but it's less contrived because it's the introduction of Elnor, and Picard is trying to make a specific point, specifically being like, I'm here because I want to help, and I need help. And so he's not in a situation where he wants to, like, you know, shoot somebody with a phaser. Not only that, he's retired. But that's my point, is like that at least there was something there. Or like the casino planet. That's a crazy contrivance in that episode of TNG, right? And maybe some people don't like that episode, but it's also like, okay, we get it. It's like the aliens made this casino planet because they read a book.
Some contrivances are okay, but yeah, some of them just don't come off right. And I think
it's
this one,
the pieces
got
to get.
Is that like the Royal or something?
Yeah, the
Royale.
The Royale.
With cheese.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
I like that episode. Data like rolls the dice.
But the President Rilak specifically told Burnham also be like, you're in charge. What you say goes. And she totally immediately backed off that right away. I mean, now the excuse was it was agreed that the ways of the Coop Malat would be respected, according to Mommy Burnham. But that's a kind of a mild perversion of that agreement, I think. You know, it's just like, and, it's like you gotta stand on your head the whole time. That's the way. Now I'm getting into a weird territory that I think I feel is a little dangerous. I'm sorry. I think I'm getting a little aggressive about.
I know it's really about... affected you, but I think.
What's next? You're gonna be able to allowed to soon. We'll be able to allowed to fart in people's faces, and the government will
it's
subsidize
a slippery
it.
Slope. Yeah. It's a slippery slope. Yeah,
just gonna go around slashing people.
They're gonna replace the term slippery slope with Coop Malat.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Coop Malat.
Yeah.
All over your face.
But I was gonna say. I need to back off a little on that. I'm getting a little out of control.
You bring up the whole, you know, their whole rigidity, but at the same time, Gabriel Burnham is, you know, with the whole absolute candor thing, absolute condor, mm-hmm. finest drink.
Yes.
Condor meat steeped in vodka.
Condor meat.
Yeah. Absolute condor.
Yeah. I didn't know that it was actual meat like being
condor is a kind of vulture.
I just came up with that now.
Just now. So meat infused vodka.
Yeah, either that or it's freshly squeezed condor juice fermented and distilled. Listen,
condor is a carrion bird, isn't it?
Yep.
I don't think you should be eating their meat.
They're a carrion bird as opposed to like a golden eagle, which is a carrying bird.
That's so funny.
They pick up things and fly away.
Yeah.
And smash them against the cliffs.
Yeah.
You know, your typical golden eagle activity.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need to, you know, I don't want to preach to the choir.
Eagles are big, dude.
Yeah, especially golden eagles.
I was an eagle once.
In a past life?
No, just like, you know, previously.
Were you tripping? Previously on Jesse's life.
I was an eagle once.
Just, you know, just in the past.
In last episode. I was an eagle. It wasn't even a previous life.
We're going to have to explore that in more detail another time. But anyway, the point I was making is that Burnham's mom, she manipulates this Coop Malatness, right? Because the whole absolute candor thing, there's a lot of times she could have said stuff, both in this episode and previous, you know, where she didn't, because it advantaged her not to. I think in the last season, Burnham might have even called her out on that. But she didn't mention to Admiral Vance or President Rillick or to Burnham before starting the mission that Jevini was the person who saved her life.
Right.
Which you might think would impact whether or not you think this person should be permitted to go on this mission.
Yeah. And I mean, and Burnham, Michael said, gave a sort of a lateral kind of, that wasn't about that, but it was about like, oh, so you picked me because you thought I'd agree with you. And that goes along with, so Michael was like, that's fucked up. But then she's like, no, that's not why. But that's exactly though.
She could have told her that earlier.
It's like, that's totally believable considering the thing. By the way,
By the by.
When Michael's like, so that's why you wanted me on the mission. If we'll recall,
did you say fool recall?
What? If you'll recall.
Oh, if you will. If you
recall.
If you will recall.
They're acting like Mommy Burnham picked Michael Burnham to be on the mission. The president picked Michael Burnham to be on the mission. Mommy Burnham just agreed to let her go on the mission.
Yeah.
And that's not nearly the same thing. Agreeing for someone to go along isn't the same as picking someone. You know, if you pick someone, it's like, Jesse, I pick you to be on the mission. I choose
you. I
pick you. That's a powerful statement. It's like, I'm choosing you. I choose you, Jesse. That's a powerful statement. Now, if Patrick was like, yeah, and I agreed to let you go, like, right. That doesn't mean shit. That doesn't mean shit.
No, it doesn't mean
It would have only meant something if Patrick said, no, you can't go. That's the only time it would have been. So it's not like there was any kind of big deal made to begin with about
I don't feel safe on this mission with an eagle.
So there was nothing.
Jesse
Eagle's gonna whip out his talons.
There was nothing in the plot. There was nothing in the plot or the story that would indicate that was ever a thing about Mommy Burnham having Michael Long on the mission. They kind of invented that at the end.
On the other hand, I will say another thing that I did very much enjoy about this episode is it was bringing back Burnham's mom for a story that was interesting tale, but it wasn't a story about the relationship between Burnham and her mom.
Right.
That was just extra. That was bonus. This was similar. This reminded me in some ways, very different tonally, of course, but it reminded me in some ways of when Loxana Troi would show up, where There would be bits and pieces. Some episodes were a little bit more specifically about her and Deanna, but so often there was a different plot going on, but you'd get those little moments where you'd learn more about Luoxana and Deanna's relationship, but it wasn't the core message of the episode necessarily, right? And this was a little bit like that, where you get some flavor of that, but the story is not about that. It's not like, boom, we're gonna have this intense
and it
thing.
Even like fizzles because Tilly tells that whole thing about like, if my mom was here, I'd just give her a big hug.
Like she's talking about,
and
she
they both
like...
just kind of look at her and they're like, okay, whatever.
But she starts talking about like she didn't like kids, you know, touching them or being around the moms, just
being happy.
And the mom's just tilting her head. It's like, what is she going on about? She gives her two looks like that. Once then, and once when she dropped the sword. Both times she's like, "Oh man!" Yeah. So I just put moisturizer on it. Hey, moisturizer in the future.
She's looking at Michael like, "What kind of friends are you?"
Yeah, exactly. First of all, that was horse shit when they got fucking ambushed. That was horse shit when they got ambushed on the ship by the Kuat Malat.
Yeah. Using the same maneuver before, where I guess they wait till the shields are lowered.
Yeah. And so that at the end, when Michael's mom was talking to Michael, she goes, or was it to Tilly? Maybe it was I think it was to Tilly, actually. When she goes, when Mommy Burnham goes, when we say choose to live, it's an abbreviated form of a longer saying. The path you are on has come to an end. Choose to live. If you find yourself at the wrong end of a Kuat Malat sword, it's pretty easy to see that particular path is over for you. Now, the problem with that above statement is that Javini said that right after she did that bullshit ambush to Michael and crew and was wrong. Like, the path wasn't over. She's like, choose to live. According to Mrs. Burnham,
invented, you know, like all she talk about tachyons. She knows about tachyons.
She knows about
time travel suits by accident and shit.
Too many tachyons.
Red angels.
So if the idea is choose to live is saying like your path is over. That's what Javini was saying to them on the ship. But clearly that wasn't the case. It was her own path that was coming to an end after they. In fact, it was after they let her help her. That's when her path came to an end for the better.
Yeah,
so,
you can't let just because the Kuat Malat says your path is at an end.
Yeah,
they don't have a say. Like, you got a sword. Well, you know, there's other ways around it. Like,
don't bring a sword to a phaser fight.
And you know, and when she said, when you're on the other end of a Kuat Malat sword, she didn't say it's likely that particular path is over. She says it's easy to see that the path is over for you.
Oh, because nobody else can sword fight? Is that what
it is? And I guess you could say it was Kuat Malat versus Kuat Malat, but not really, you know, like, I mean...
You know what? I didn't catch that, and now that you say that, it's another thing where I wish that had been a thematic addition to the episode, similar to the episode of Deep Space Nine when he and his genetically troubled friends do some complicated math and they predict that the best course of action would be for the Federation to surrender to the Dominion, because even though they would briefly be, you know, for, they were like...
You said he to his friends, who?
Oh, Bashir. Did I not say Bashir?
I didn't hear Bashir.
Oh, sorry. Dr. Bashir and his genetically hilarious friends, they calculate that if the Federation surrenders, that in 150 years, there will be like a resistance, and then there will be a rebirth of a new Federation, and it will be like even better than before. So they said, tactically, the Federation should surrender. And the Federation was like, you can go fuck yourself. And then Bashir was like, they don't understand the math. I'll go talk to Captain Sisko. And he told it to Captain Sisko, and Captain Sisko was like, dude, you can fuck yourself. You can fuck yourself with your math that says we gotta quit. I'm sorry. And then but the point in that episode is something happens, and I won't spoil it for those who haven't seen it, but something happens in which the prediction is undermined. And Bashir learns the lesson that it doesn't matter the genetic intelligence and the equations and all this other stuff, that you cannot actually predict the future as well as he had assumed he could. He had supreme confidence in that. And they could have done something similar on a much smaller scale here by introducing that theme of having, because at the end of this episode, Javini is arrested and, you know, seems to be like, okay, I'm arrested now. And then she gets transferred to Navarre. We don't know exactly what's going to happen to her, whether she's punished or not. We don't know yet, but we don't have that feeling of closure. And part of that, no doubt, was to give the audience the similar feeling. They wanted us to share the feeling with Burnham and to a certain degree Vance, who did want that closure, and they're upset that they're not going to get it in the Starfleet context because it was a Starfleet officer who was murdered. One of our tribe was murdered. So I'm sure they wanted the audience to feel that a little bit, but at the same time, we do feel that, and it kind of robs us a little bit of being like, well, what exactly are we sort of meant to take away from this? And I think if they had added in a little bit of her kind of thinking, you know what, I guess there were choices. Mm-hmm, you know?
Right.
Granted, all that being said, interesting analysis aside, somebody else might very well come along and say, well, she gave Tilly a choice. Tilly offered to live. She said, Tilly hilariously said, like, I choose to live. Yeah. I choose 100% that I choose yeah. to live. And you could argue that in that case, that equation was fulfilled. If you want to be super semantic.
Equation.
A couple different ways you can look at it. Write in at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com and subject line, what do you know?
What do you know?
What do you know?
What do you know?
What do you know? What do you think?
I guess we should talk about Gray and the Adira situation a little
bit. When Guardian Z showed up, they should have been all like, hey, Z.
Yeah, that Guardian Z guy is cool.
Hey, Z.
Yeah, you know, so it's interesting because this storyline this season has, I really like the concept of the storyline. I haven't been as enthralled with the execution. Mm-hmm. Can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe it's just a little bit in the previous two episodes, it was a little disjointed, maybe,
yeah,
from what was going on.
Disjointed.
This episode, I liked it. And part of why maybe I enjoyed it was because there was real closure to it, right? We don't know exactly what's going to happen next. We can take some guesses, but there was a bit of an arc here. And the arc was all about Gray. He wants to be embodied. And he had a few, I mean, real heavy hitting lines. You know, Dan, you were talking earlier about how it can be heavy, but in a good way, where where he says, I've been living in an in-between place for so long already, I have to try.
Yeah.
And when you think of that in terms of sort of the transgender metaphor, I mean, it's like a beautiful line there. Mm-hmm. And the other line, you know, shortly after that, when Gray actually is embodied and wakes up, and Adira, they ask him, are you? And Gray just starts crying. That's the part where I tear up, because it really came across as meaningful and sincere and difficult to capture into words. And they just did a really good job of putting that together. So I enjoyed it in the context of this episode. Some of the lead up, it just didn't grab me as much.
Yeah. I don't know what struck me about when Adira was looking at him when they didn't know what was going on, and they go, it's him, but it's not him, and I don't really know what to do with that. And the face Adira made along with that line, something about that struck me too. It was just like kind of like trying to process all the information and not knowing, being at a loss for what to do.
It reminded me of, you know, sort of scenes you see in media or can imagine
the media
or some people have experienced in real life, where you're dealing with somebody like a family member or a close loved one who is in a medical emergency, or maybe they're in a coma or have some sort of brain injury or damage or been under surgery or something, and it's, you're talking to this lifeless, you know, corpse like creature, and you don't know yet whether the person you love is still in there or not.
Right.
And the lines, the framing, the setup of the medical bed, the fact that it was taking place in what appeared to be sick bay, that all played into that metaphor of like this injured person, are they going to come back? So even though the context was a little different, it was transferring a soul magically in a scene we did not see.
Yeah.
which annoyed a lot of people online, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
But they used the tropes and the trappings of the medical drama, patient, and their loved ones hoping they wake up.
Right. Yeah. It was interesting that everyone around Adira unconditionally believes them about Gray's presence.
Yes.
You know, like. So I guess the.
Do you think that Culber was waiting in the bar? He was waiting down by the corner.
Credence.
Yeah, he was
Credence.
He was waiting down
on
the
corner.
Oh, down on the corner.
Whatever.
Out in the street. He was waiting down there, and he and Saru and a couple other crew members had bets on whether or not this
person was real.
This robot was going to fucking wake up and start talking.
Right. So
That's why he rushed in. He didn't rush in because he got some sort of medical page.
I won.
He's like, the baby was like, tight. I totally bet it was going to happen.
So I guess we're supposed to, because they were able to somehow detect, Z and them were able to detect that there was a detachment that took place. So somehow, yes. Like meaning that Gray left, whatever Gray was.
Yeah. In the scene that we don't see.
Somehow.
Which I don't mind so much, but yes.
Somehow they can tell that this thing is in Adira, but at the same time, it's like the rest of, I couldn't tell, because on the one hand, it seems like everyone's believing Adira without question. Oh yeah, this person that is in Adira's head is real. And so I was like, that seems kind of weird and a lot of trust. But then suddenly we're to assume, because Z comes along saying, oh yeah, the unpairing was successful. It's like, how the, what? You know, I don't need you to hold my hand through all this,
it's exposition. Explaining to us what we need to know.
I know.
Because they didn't want to have the scene where
Guardian Z knows.
Well, because they don't have Trill pools and pods on the Discovery, right? And so yeah. what was he gonna do, like hover and like grab a orb of glowing light and squish it into the synth?
Look, I'm okay with magic and
from production standpoint, I guarantee you they were like we don't know how the fuck to film this, right? And it doesn't look stupid.
Yeah, right, probably.
But like on TNG we could do this and it wouldn't look stupid. In the context of everything else we've built here, it would look really dumb.
So you can take that exposition idea or whatever, or any sort of tool or whatever works to get through the plot. And whether, for example, if you have a war between
whatever gets you through the night,
whatever you have, whether you have wizards throwing fireballs at each other or a bunch of people firing, big bazookas, because everyone's got phaser bazookas. It doesn't really matter what they're firing at each other. It's telling something different. Yeah. In this case, it's a little far to reach on that one. But like you said, Patrick, I think if we don't know how to make this seem reasonable.
I think sometimes it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Can you make this not like completely pull this story to a halt because it looks silly?
Yeah, get bogged down with that. So it's not like it really bothered me that much, but I was just kind of like, okay, whatever. We just kind of have to accept that. We never see Gray's architect, do we?
No, yeah.
You'd think the architect would be interested in being present for such an
They mentioned something about the design of the body or whatever.
Right, it was based on Soong's designs.
Yeah.
But like the person who actually are they saying the architect was dead?
No. I mean, they said it was based on Soong's designs, but I'm drawing a blank now if they mentioned a name, if it was a crew member.
Well, you'd think that the
or the computers, or was Zora just doing it? I just don't recall. I don't know if it's because I missed something or because they just didn't really.
I don't think they've really. They haven't really said much about who did it. They've mentioned the designer or the architect.
I'm just saying that you'd think as an architect, for such an unprecedented scenario. You know, because this is even more different than Picard. This is a totally different thing. You might want to be present, you know, but whatever. That doesn't matter.
That is a good point. It's like, maybe they just didn't want to, like, we got to have one more character on this fucking show.
Yeah, so it's not a biggie.
And it goes into a little bit, again, as you mentioned earlier, the themes of letting go and loss. And I think they go beyond a little bit with Adira. They are a teenager. They are in a new role, working on the Discovery, and they are going to have to get used to Gray not only being independent from them. And you have to remember the context in Trill world, even though Adira is a human, in a normal Trill host relationship, they have those memory brain things living in the worm, and they have they are influenced and have some limited amount of access to those things. I think we're meant to understand, because it's kind of the only thing that makes sense in the context. I think we're meant to understand that what they've done is Gray is completely removed. So now Gray is no longer influencing Adira, not only just keeping them company, but influencing Adira in the whole Trill sense of the world. And we know that Gray, he wants to become he wants to continue his training to become a guardian like Z.
I think they're going to write Gray out of the show after this.
I presume that's, and probably it was always the intention to some degree.
Maybe it's just meant to be a short arc or something.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me, because with Adira, and they've already started to stress this over the last few episodes, is they are a teenager, and they need to grow into young adulthood, learn to form community externally. And that's partly a metaphor for Adira and If you recall where we first met Adira on Earth, which Earth has become isolationist, we still don't know. I don't know if they've been explicit yet or not about whether Earth has rejoined the Federation or not. Because remember, the Federation is separate from Earth now, and Earth became an isolationist. And
so it's like Earth now.
So not in addition to the point they make in this episode, which is that Adira, like a lot of the other Starfleet recruits and stuff, they're not used to seeing other species as much because of the limitations on space travel before they Discovery saved the day last season. They didn't really have as much opportunity to interact. They could, but just not as much for the average person. So Adira, it also represents that the Earth position trying to open up and make connections, which can be difficult if you're not used to doing that, right? So it makes sense to remove Gray from the scene. So we'll see where things go. I'm very curious what happens in the next episode, particularly to see if they continue this trend, which I hope they do, of having the DMA mostly in the background, maybe little bits and pieces, kind of like the Stamets thing here, where you're trying to get at what's going on and move that plot forward a little bit, solve the mystery, help resolve the issue, but then have the front story, the front loaded part of the story, be some other thing that's involving the characters.
So I don't know if the writers meant to do this. I'm sure they did. I mean, because it's not that deep of a grasp. But when Adira was throwing the darts and Colbert was like telling Adira, it's like, sometimes you should connect with people, basically telling Adira that they need to, you know, in lieu of control over this situation, just connect with someone else and have them be your guiding light, is basically what Colbert told them. And but instead, Adira ended up trying to connect with Gray to be Gray's guiding light, you know? So it was interesting. I think because what I took from it is Colbert was telling Adira to connect with someone else and use them as a guiding light. But instead, Adira took the role of being the guiding light for Gray. So even after he told Adira to like get away from the scenario, Adira ended up going back anyway. And I don't know really what to make of that, if anything. I don't know. It seems like that Adira took his advice and sort of twisted it around. I don't know.
Maybe it was
that's what they do. They're all sneaky.
Yeah, maybe it was who?
All right. Well, so
Adira.
What?
Adira.
Oh yeah.
So
sure.
Odds and ends. I guess the big thing I would say is this episode, in addition, it was entertaining. It was pretty tightly written, although we've, you know, critiqued a few things here or there. But to me, it also felt very, very lived in. Discovery is starting to feel a little bit more lived in, almost Deep Space Nine style, where there's all these characters that they've built up. You've got Z, you've got President Tarini, you've got Rilik, of course, introduced this season, Vance. We're just seeing, you know, the flavors, the interactions come back and forth, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. I hope they keep that up and keep taking advantage of that.
Yeah, I like
lived in style.
Yeah, I like the direction.
It is like Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I like the direction it's taking, and I'm glad it finally started to take more of the direction's taking more form.
And they're always hanging out in Vance's office, and Vance is always giving like lengthy analogies.
Oh yeah,
charming. That's a lot of lengthy analogies.
Oh, they pay me by the word.
That was a really great analogy. It wasn't that much analogy.
Yeah, right. Well, Burnham doesn't like.
I know she was barred by Vulcans.
How often do you think like the cellists or whatever are drunk in an orchestra or like, any kind of group of instrument? How often do you think?
It's usually the brass.
Do you think
there was a lot of brass in this episode? By the way,
do you think there was a lot of top brass?
Well, when they were doing when those aubergine aliens were going from the moon ship to the planet, it was like blah! It was like proper Star Trek style brass. Yeah.
There was President Tarini and President what's her name?
Martini, President Martini.
Rilak.
President Bellini.
I didn't vote for.
So there was President Tarina.
Nobody voted for Ford.
There was President Tarina and President Rilak. That's some real top brass. Top brass.
Like a trumpet?
He means like the real. He's getting the analogy a little bit wrong.
Like no,
the
I'm
first,
not.
Like he, the first he, trumpet player.
He's using a colloquialism that generally refers to the upper echelons of the military, but he's applying it to the upper echelons of the political structures.
Yeah, but the political Navarism. But the political structure here directly influences the military.
Also true
metaphor on
in so many of our trumpets. Countries here.
So I'm not mixing any metaphors up.
With respect.
No, because
with respect.
Like the admiral has to listen to whatever the president. The president somehow has control over all everything
with
in
respect,
this scenario.
With respect. That's that the.
Just don't talk down to me.
I'm not talking
you
down
to you. You are totally dogging down to me. You can't say you're not pooping in my face while you poop in my face. I mean, believe you.
I'm overtly stating that I'm intending this with the fullest respect.
Oh my God, you're saying it in the shittiest way you can possibly say it.
All I just wanted to state clearly. From
it's
my
showing,
perspective,
it's ironically showing little respect to word it like that.
It's because it's very difficult to navigate this type of aphorismal error in that.
It's not an error. Fuck you.
I'm just saying, you're saying that.
Just because I don't.
Top Brass, in the context that it was originally derived in.
Oh, God.
Is in the context where they have a president of the United States and they still refer to them as the top brass. Yet the president's in charge, but the president generally wouldn't be lumped in with the top brass of the military. That's all I'm saying. I'm arguing that point.
This is a civilian government.
I'm arguing it. I am freely accepting evidence contrary to my opinion to be presented at the appropriate
time.
Look,
you can express your opinion, or you can express what you believe.
You can express yourself.
Believe to be fact, but you can do it without saying, with all respect, Dan, what you need to understand about the top brass is, but it's cute that you think you're right, you know.
So there are many paths we take in life. And sometimes they end.
There's a path. The path you take and a path not taken. The choice is up to you, my friend.
Sometimes I fear that in a few minutes here, as we close down the podcast, I'm going to end up at the other end of a
no.
Dan sword.
Oh no!
Of a Dan no, Watt no. Kalat. Dan no, sword the... a lot.
Dance a lot.
Dance a lot. Okay. Odds and ends. Odds and ends. What other odds and ends?
Hello, little tracker. That was Tilly said, hello, yes. Little tracker. That was like Scotty when goes, hello, computer.
Yes, I like that. Tilly's cute. Yeah. Dr. Culber is very sexy.
Yes.
I've said that before.
He's mm-hmm. got good beard growth.
But yeah, he's yeah. talking about
he keeps
growing
it tight.
Your beard.
It doesn't work on everybody. It works.
Dr. Culber leaning on a bar with a fire, like with a glass fireplace behind him, casually sipping on some sort of a dark liquor. All right in my book.
If darts were like that, I would be really into playing darts.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Like if you hit the dartboard and it all like shimmers like that,
I mean,
I'd be really into that.
It's kind of cool, but I don't know. I would in my brain, I'd be like, you know, if the board were a proper dartboard, it would have scored properly. I would have gotten a higher score if it didn't have those goobly globs. And
like, I just don't.
Lights were distracting me.
I'm not that into darts. I'm just saying, like, I could have gotten into darts if it did, if the board did that.
Bashir and O'Brien were into darts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Darts. They mentioned something about, before the opening credits, they mentioned something about the Galan Khan or something. The Galan Khan on behalf of a lost cause.
Falun Gong?
No. They said, we believe Javini most likely is acting as a Galan Khan on behalf of a lost cause. I looked up Galan Khan or whatever. There's only like literally one reference on the internet to
literally one reference.
No, I typed it in, I typed it in Google and it got one result. And that result is from Choose to Live. And it's just a transcript of the episode.
It's a new thing.
So it's a new thing that not even Memory Alpha or anyone has gotten on yet. Usually they get to him pretty quickly. Usually they get to him within like a day.
They're getting a little slower.
A little slower. Must be because of the variant or something.
No, it's slower.
Memory Omicron.
No, no. I'll tell you, it's due to a total and utter lack of tachyons.
Oh, that's right. That's
slowing
why.
Down the time
that's, frames. Whoa, that's the correlation. It's not spurious.
It's a evidence of abstinence. Abstinence of
abstinence. Evidence of abstinence?
That's not what I said.
So they were saying...
I just added a syllable.
So I'm,
wet dreams are evidence of abstinence.
So... I know I said this last week, but I'm bringing it up again because they brought it up again. They started it. They said, this is the biggest problem since the burn. And I should hope this is the biggest problem since the burn.
I know. What are the problems?
Two cosmic events within like a year or so. Yeah. That's like,
no, the burn was like a century prior.
Well, but
but it was still affecting.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You're a good point.
Yeah, it's the first thing they've had to deal with.
But it just got resolved.
It's the, well, yes.
But you're right, though. It was an old problem. You're right. The origin of it was much longer.
All right, more odds and ends.
I wanted to say that I'm glad, though. This is totally superficial and weird. I'm in the fight between Gabrielle and Javini. I'm glad Gabrielle lost quickly because it would be annoying if she could keep up with Javini. Because Javini is obviously superior in training and ability. quality.
Born into it.
Yeah, born into it.
Because, so, I mean, Gabrielle's only been doing it for like maybe a year.
Yeah, yeah. Two.
No, it's been longer than that because she came.
Did she got there first?
She got there like a long time before. Okay. I forget the specifics, okay. But it was a fair, because Burnham got there before Discovery, but her mom was there even before that.
Okay.
Yeah. That was kind of the order.
She went back like way before. That's right.
Yeah. So it's annoying when someone who obviously has not enough skill somehow is able to keep it up for the sake of, you know, making it more exciting
so
or whatever.
You like that. I'll tell you
although Tilly probably should have gotten killed on that ship when they ambushed her. But like, I'm just going to pretend that they were all protecting Tilly because they knew she didn't have skills.
And, you know, they're wearing those suits of armor that have to offer some level of protection that, you know, Commander Patrick
Ireland?
Fickett. Patrick Fickett. He did not have a black super ninja outfit on when he got stabbed, right?
Oh, but that was the Credence captain. Right?
Is that the British way of saying
Thicket? He was the commander, first officer.
Is that the British way of saying Thicket?
I thought it was funny that his name was Patrick Fickett because Thicket. It was almost like he was like, fuck it, I'm just going to attack this.
What if his name was Patrick Spickett?
What I like about not only this episode, but Discovery in general, is how few scenes, in fact, there are often no scenes that have even one white, cisgender, heterosexual male.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's awesome. Yeah. And I am a white.
I don't think they even have him on the ship.
Cisgender, me, mostly heterosexual male. And I think that's awesome because I get bored seeing movies of sexy white men like myself being heroes and winning the day. It's really much more interesting to see a whole variety of people.
There's Vance. That's about it.
Yeah, honestly, Vance doesn't count because I think
he's a Mediterranean.
I think, yes, exactly. And that gets into the whole complex. It's like, well, what do you mean by white? Do you just mean white Anglo-Saxon Protestants from the Northeast? Reading that book, How the Irish Became White, they weren't white until fairly recently, nor were the Italians. But anyway, I think that's just, it's always fun to remind ourselves that it's not just that we get to see all sorts of representation that you don't see as often on television generally. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's taken for granted that like we're just getting to see competent, awesome characters having adventures, and it very rarely does it focus on Captain Pike type, you know.
Right.
And Captain Pike is great. I love seeing Captain Pike. That's awesome.
We all do.
But it's nice when Captain Pike is not surrounded by a bunch of little mini Captain Pikes and the same haircut and the same square jaw. And,
agreed.
You know.
That effect when Leto dissolved during Book's sort of mind meld, he saw Leto dissolve. Mm-hmm. I swear I've seen that effect. I don't know if in this show or if in another show, but this sort of...
It looked a little... Looked familiar. Avengers Infinity War.
Maybe that's what
Thanos
it was.
Thanos snap. It wasn't as dusty, but it had that. It had a similar vibe going to it. You know?
Yeah, that must be it. Swamp Kelp is fun.
Yes, the whole I did like the swamp kelp thing was definitely fun. any other odds and ends? I will say, not to be a lame-o braggart, but this show looks pretty good in 4K. You got a 4K television. It looks pretty good.
I thought you were talking about our podcast for a minute. I was like, what is he going on about?
Oh, no. Our podcast our podcast looks really good in 4K,
oh, sweet.
Actually.
Yeah. Looks, yeah.
Sign up for it. All sorts of looks. Sign up for the 4K feed.
4K audio.
Discovery.
Yeah, it does look good.
You can see all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
it does look good.
And it's one of those shows that benefits from it because there's so much detail and atmosphere, and it's in not that every single special effect's perfect. We complained a little bit. Remember, we were talking about what we thought was a tribble walking down.
Oh yeah,
and it looked all ridiculous.
Yeah.
Some people on the internet are arguing that that's actually a Horta. But I don't know. It's like, it's because I thought the Horta were bigger, but maybe that's like a junior Vorta. But anyway, that's a whole nother discussion to have. But by and large, it's not only that they have great production value, but when you
Horta look a little goopier.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But anyway,
they're more nodules.
When you see this in the really nice 4K, it kind of is mind blowing how much effort and work they put into it, because it's even more than they needed to really necessarily, because most people are watching it in 1080p and it still looks gorgeous, right? But you see these little details, especially in that moon ship with the cryonic, you know, whatever, you
stasis,
know, the Rene Auberjonois creatures, whatever their name is. I always weren't they the Rene Auberjonois?
Are you talking about the Abronians?
The Bronians.
Well, hey, bro! Hey,
Brownians.
They're not even close. They don't change shape.
We just woke up.
They don't. What are you talking about? The Jabronians.
Bro, I'm hungry.
You got there. We go. All right.
I didn't see them change shape.
I think the podcast is effectively over.
Easy.
The Jabronians. Okay. Good episode. Good episode of Discovery. Great episode of the podcast.
Absolutely.
You can confirm this by rating and reviewing
Apple Podcasts.
Where the fuck you do that? Apple Podcasts would be a good one.
Or what's that? What's that podcast thing where they do the things, the ads, the podcast mystery or whatever?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know where you can buy the ads? They have that ad tier format.
Podcast mystery?
Do you
pick a button? You just click a button and like a random podcast plays?
Podcast capital.
What was that one they had that, the weird ads, how they set up the ads where you buy space on the ad and then like a normal ad, except they cycle them and they open up space and you pay more depending on if it's...
I don't know what you're talking
you're
about.
You're the one who introduced this to me like a year ago.
Dan had a few too many tachyons this evening.
No tachyons.
Slurping down them tachyons.
I'm tachyon,
you know what I mean.
Free.
Sucking down those tachyons.
There was no evidence of tachyons.
Coke Zero and soda water with lemon. Yeah. That was my tachyons.
Ooh,
that
sounds
we'll
delightful.
Talk about it later.
Okay.
Soda water
we'll
with
talk
lemon.
Talk about it offline because I'm sure, no doubt, you'll remind me and at some point I'll remember. Mm-hmm. But my brain's not thinking that way right now. It's not thinking remembery. My brain's not like all
it's not all remembery. Right now.
Write a review on podcast.
Podcast.net. Go to podcasts.net. Yeah, I'm sure that's a thing. Yeah. Write a
total
review.
Podcast explosion.
Or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, all the podcast places, wherever you want to go. Amazon Podcasts, we're on there too.
I have an Android phone, but I understand that Apple Podcasts is like a powerful thing.
Or Overcast.
Maybe that's what I was thinking was Overcast.
Podcast blowhole.
Anyway, you're listening to the podcast, so you found it. Just do that again next
do
week.
Do it next time.
Do it next week when we'll be discussing.
You never know.
Starts with an all. All the episodes called like all good. All, it's not, not all good things.
No,
all good things part two.
The title is irrelevant. You'll know it by next.
It doesn't
week.
Matter.
It doesn't.
I know what it is.
What is it?
All is possible.
There you go. I knew. I got the all part right.
Yeah, good.
I got
good
the all
you.
Part right. I'm proud of that. But
that means it's got a Q in it. Right?
In the meantime, you should definitely follow us on Twitter at It's Got Star Trek, on Instagram at It's Got Star Trek, on Facebook search for It's Got Star Trek, on YouTube subscribe to YouTube. Some cool stuff is going to be coming up on YouTube eventually when we get around to it, and possibly over the holidays. It's Got Star Trek Christmas Treat. I might have obligated us to that by saying it on the podcast. But anyway,
you sounded like orange mocha frappuccinos.
Search for It's Got Star Trek and click yes on everything that comes up. Otherwise, we'll talk about Allspice Pumpkins,
orange
episode 4 of Star Trek Discovery season 4, episode 404, section 4, E404.
S4.
Next week. Talking about all the pumpkins in the universe is the name of the episode.
Posible del todos.
And in the intervening time, you listen to old episodes. You don't.
What are you worried about?
Other podcasts or watch some TV. Read a book. The new Expanse book.
How
is
about
out.
Reading a
it's
book?
Really good. Read a book. Otherwise, we'll say goodbye.
Of late, I am often reminded of a Kelpian adage: it is difficult to ride two veil beasts with only one set of buttocks.
Try riding three of them.